the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show, and a special welcome to all of you who are joining us for the very first time. We're glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. A quick reminder about the K-Files e-zine. If you have not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, you need to do that. And you will get a, when you subscribe, you will get a confirmation email. You have to click a link in there, and that activates your subscription. It takes, 10 seconds to do it. No strings attached, really. And you can unsubscribe anytime you decide to. Well, what do you think about time travel? I know we've talked about time travel some here on the show. We've talked about it some in the past. And we're going to talk about it some tonight. One of the questions that I have had people pose to me is, well, if time travel really is possible, why haven't we seen any time travelers? Well, you need to be aware that there are some folks who say we have. John Titor showed up online in chat rooms, I think it was late in 1999, might have been around 2000, and he claimed to be from the year 2036, created quite a stir. Many of you heard him, you read what he put on the internet, and you heard him on radio. He made statements about the future of mankind and about our destiny, stating that we needed to change some of the ways we live our lives, and if not, he said that we were headed for a nuclear war involving North Korea, Iran, and the U.S. Now remember, this was 9 years ago. Iran and North Korea had no nuclear capabilities at that time. In 2001, he just vanished, never to be heard from again. Very mysterious. The question is, who is this guy, John Titor? Was he really a time traveler from 2036? There are people who argue that time travel is indeed possible. There are people who argue that, in fact, we do have the capability of doing time travel already. And then some of those people scoff at the idea that someone from the future has come back and talked to us and then disappeared back into the future again. Well, it seems to me you can't have it both ways. It's either possible or not, and if it is, then perhaps John Titor was in fact who he claimed to be, a traveler from 2036. My guest tonight is Scott Norwood. Scott Norwood is the producer of a docudrama having to do with John Titor and his claims about the times in which we live. He's going to join me here online in just a moment. He's on the telephone, standing by, waiting patiently, and he'll join me in just a moment as we discover tonight this mystery of John Titor. We'll be back right after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Scott Norwood. He has spent some 18 years in the production business, and he is the producer and, I believe, director of this new docudrama. Scott, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, sir. Are you the both producer and director?
That is correct.
Yeah. Well, Scott, John Titor has been a very controversial person, a controversial topic, since he first showed up. There were many that scoffed, and now there were some who believed that he was telling the truth. And now it seems there is a sort of a groundswell of support for the idea that he was telling the truth because of the fact that he said things back in 2000 that there's no way people could have imagined it would happen, and now it's happening. And bring us up to date a little bit. First, tell us, who is this guy, John Titor?
Well, I would say he is, if he's not from the future, he's one of the most insightful people that I've heard speak. I think, in my opinion, most of the things he said were true in regards to the reason we would end up in nuclear war and a possible civil war. And the overall reason was misunderstanding of mankind, not accepting other people for their religious beliefs or their racial backgrounds or their ethnic backgrounds. And I think that's if you look at his prediction of the Iran, North Korea, and the United States, all three of us are basically different political views, different religions, different ethnic backgrounds. And I think it's ironic that it has come to this and that his quote unquote predictions have seemed to be on their way.
Now, he said this back in 2000 about possible nuclear war involving the U.S., Iran, and North Korea. And at that time, the U.S. had nuclear power, but North Korea did not, and Iran did not. Now, all three of those have nuclear power. And in addition to that, the tiny dictator over in Korea.
Tiny.
Yeah. And let me say this, before anybody makes a connection here that I'm making remarks about his size, I'm not. I'm making remarks about his apparent mental capabilities. I think the guy is tiny. He's a small thinker. And a big talker. That guy now has nuclear bombs. And then Iran says, "Oh no, we don't have any, and we're just doing nuclear power so we can have electricity." And of course, they're one of the largest exporters of petroleum on the planet. So they actually do not need nuclear power. And so here we are, and you know, both Iran and Korea are being led by men who are, and this is my opinion, it's from my point of view, I think they are insane. Ahmadinejad.
Two people, that's my point of view as well.
Well, Ahmadinejad and Kim Jong-un. Il, or whatever his name is, over in Korea, are shaking their fists at the entire world and saying, in essence, by God, we have the bomb, or we're going to get it, and if you mess with us, we're going to use it. This is insane. Now, Titer talked about this back in 2000. How could he have known this?
That's one of the greatest questions of all time. My only answer to that would be he was either from the future or a very lucky guesser. There was a few of his other predictions that came true that were technologically viable, but I, even at the time when he mentioned them, I didn't think that would ever actually be the case. For instance, he mentioned that all lines of communication would eventually run through our cable connections. At the time, it was just TV, and we were online through phone lines. It wasn't another 2 or 3 years later before DSL came through, and we were able to use your get on the internet anyways through cable lines. And then, much to my surprise, a few years after that, you could hook up your home telephone through cable lines. So all the communications via media and TV, information on the internet, and person-to-person talking on the phone were all run through one line. I'm fairly technologically savvy, and I would have never thought the phone anyways would have been able to use through the cable line. I'd actually worked for a cable station for a while, and we had plenty of problems just getting TV signal to people, so I would have never thought that would have came true. But yeah, it's very odd to see some of his predictions that have come true, and wondering where would he have gotten that information. But then you also have the argument that people make that some of the predictions that he made haven't come true, and he gave a few dates on some of them. Most of the blogs that I've read regarding John and some of his predictions, people are saying that since he came back, we've made differences in our own timeline, that we've gone ahead and made those changes and fixed those things so as to, not necessarily to make them happen, but as a people we have come together and realized some of our own faults and mistakes and have corrected some of those things, and hence they haven't come true.
Well, I think that in some cases that is the case. If you compare 2000 to 2009, just in the United States of America, there have been massive, massive social changes in those 9 years, unprecedented in their scope and in their pace. And so in some cases, I think it is true. And I think there are quite a number of people today who are more, they seem to have a higher consciousness than we had in 2000, and more in tune with sort of the live and let live philosophy that John Titer said we sort of have to adopt. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions about Titer. First of all, where did he say he came from? We know when. He said he came from 2036, but from where?
I don't recall. I want to say Florida off the top of my head, but that could have been in reference to where his parents were living, maybe. Yeah, let me. You asked the question, where was he from when he came back from 2036?
Well, in 2036, where is he alleged to be living?
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't think I could answer that one, honestly. I would have to go back to one of the websites and pull up the blogs and search for that.
Well, why did he travel back in time? What was his purpose for coming back?
His purpose was to obtain an IBM 5100. And in hearing that he was coming back to get a computer from back that was put out back in the late 80s, made me personally wonder, why did you have to come back to get a 1980s computer? Wouldn't you have more technology in 2036 that would fix your systems or the Linux system that he claimed that was down. And so I did some research in process of making this movie about more about that IBM 5100. It was interesting enough that it was the first personal computer released by IBM. It was very small, and in regards to the amount of memory it had, it wouldn't even hold the amount of memory that a current CD data disk would hold. It used vinyl tape similar to 8-track for its portable memory systems. It was about $10,000 back in 1980, and again, because it was the first personal computer, but the reason he said he was coming back for it was because it had a binarial system that could go both forwards and backwards. Computers now have a unilateral system, meaning they only go forwards, saying, using the reference in time, if you remember back to when it turned into the year 2000, so many people were worried that their computers would break down or they would just forget where they were because it would flip into another time zone that it wasn't programmed for. But that would be the case because the computer only would go forwards. I thought it was interesting that that IBM 5100 could both go backwards and forwards, whether it was time, calculations. It had a processor in it that IBM felt that it was a mistake that it would lead to potential problems. And then they came out with the 51, I think it was 5110 was the name of the next model. That it was only a binary, a unilateral system, that it would only go forwards. Interestingly enough, after we did one interview, each time we do interviews about the John Titor subject, we get quite a few emails of people giving us stories and telling us their insights to them. One person in particular had a few extensive messages with him, and he had become interested in the Titor story and started following it, found out about the IBM 100, and his cousin worked at the IBM headquarters. He asked his cousin about this computer, and his cousin said he didn't know much about it, that he would ask around. So he did some asking around and even went to the headquarters museum and looked for the IBM 5100 and couldn't find it in their museum. Supposedly this museum has every computer that IBM has put out on display to show you their progression of technology. According to this gentleman, when he had asked his boss about the IBM 5100, he told them that he didn't know anything about it and that he probably should just pay attention to his own line of work and stop asking questions about what happened in the past. I thought that story was fairly interesting.
Well, and I'll tell you why that may be significant. There is a theory in amongst those who discuss time travel, there is a theory that you would be able to travel forward in time. If you could create a time machine, you could travel forward in time, but you could not travel backward beyond the point where the time machine was built.
That's a very good point. We actually have an interview in the film regarding that exact topic, but go ahead.
Well, if that's the case, then the fact that we have a time traveler coming back from 2036 to our time period means that the time machine, the capability, had to have been built prior to 2000.
Exactly.
That means that if this theory is correct, and if John Titor or Titor, how do you pronounce it?
I've heard lots of people say, in just about every different interview, people will say Titor, Titor, Titor. I've gone along with the Titor pronunciation just due to time and what I've been told by certain people.
Okay, well, I'll pronounce it Titor then, if I can remember to do so. But the fact that he's come back from 2036, providing that's true, that means then that at some point prior to his arrival, we had time travel capabilities.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And even more interesting is that that IBM, once IBM came out with that 5100 that had the reversible binary capability, it was a government contract, and they stopped selling it.
I see.
80. Yes. Very interesting facts as we pop along.
Well, there and there. Did he say why he needed this computer?
Because of its reversible binary capability, that it could go both forwards and backwards. That was his. That was pretty much all he said. When I did more research on it myself, it seemed to make sense that if the computer could run a clock backwards as well as forwards, that would probably help out in the, for lack of a better term, running your flux capacitor or whatever it would be in the time travel machine. It would need to know how to run itself backwards. I would imagine that with the story of the Philadelphia experiment, that the government was using Nikola Tesla to try and basically create a stealth type of plane that we have now, and that the reports were that when he'd hooked it up to the ship basically ended up somewhere else and then came back at about the same, just a few seconds later. So if they were creating that stuff back in during the Cold War eras or studying it, I don't see why we couldn't have come across it. If we did come across it, they'd obviously keep it a great secret.
In the movie, and I don't know how faithful the movie is to what is known about the Philadelphia experiment, but in the movie, that ship was transported not only its location, but it was transported in time to 1983.
Mm-hmm.
When was the computer built?
I believe it was, I want to say mid-80s. I remember it was the 80s because most of the pictures that I saw, I'm linking that into my brain. I can't remember the exact date. But they would have probably been working on making it through the early 80s in order for it to be able to come out in mid-80s.
Wonder if someone in 1983 saw a ship appear for a few seconds and disappear and got busy putting together a time travel algorithm.
Interesting theory.
Well, we probably will never know about that. But now, did you ever meet John Titor?
I did not personally. That was one of Chris McCarthy's objectives, and you'll see throughout the film. One of her objectives was to try and make contact with him, whether it was just online. She preferably wanted to talk to him in person. Without spoiling the end of the movie, that's part of the ending of the story is trying to get in contact with him and talk to him and ask him questions. We did, however, as you'll see in the movie, she documented everything pretty well, that she had her quantum physicist come in that she had done an interview with and asked John Titor some questions and some theories and algorithms that a normal person wouldn't understand. He answered her questions and explained some things to her that I wouldn't understand because I'm not into quantum physics, but it impressed the quantum physicist and actually kind of shocked her in some of the things that he replied and some of the thoughts that he gave back.
All right, we have a break coming up, and this is a good place for us to step out. And we will return more with Scott Norwood about John Titor, time traveler, and this new film that's out. All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Scott Norwood. Scott, talking about John Titor and him coming back for this computer, you know, the as you said, the thought that, comes to mind at first is that, well, in 2036, surely they've got computer technology way in advance of this, and they would. As a matter of fact, this past week, it was announced that they've just come up with a processor that processes at the quantum level.
Wow!
And they say that it is an infant, and that it can't do a lot yet. But it's the first one that processes at a quantum level. Now, and you know, we talk about how many, you know, the speed is like, you know, 2 gigs, 3 gigs. They measure it as 2 qubits.
Wow.
All right, so it's massive. But then if you stop and think about NASA, NASA got rid of computer equipment. They were just getting rid of it, and some of the employees said, well, look, if you're just going to throw this away, can I have it? And NASA said, yeah, take it. Get it out of here. So they got all of that stuff out, and one or two of these employees just stored these in their garage. Now that we're talking about going back to the moon, they want to, you know, view the tapes. They want to process the data and take a look at it again. They want to view the videos again. And they don't have equipment that can even handle the stuff that all that's stored on. They have nothing to play it on. If you will, they have no record player. And so this stuff is coming out of the garages now, so that NASA can use it again to view video and to read data that they no longer had the equipment capable of reading.
Interesting. Very similar to what John Titor was going through.
Yeah, so, you know, it doesn't seem fantastic because we're watching it happen now with the NASA stuff. All right, now, Titor comes back. Why did he decide to get online and start saying things about the future?
I think he, in my opinion, simply my opinion, he was probably just communicating with people. At first, you know, telling people, you know, some people asking him questions, because back when he came on, it was chat rooms that was all that you could talk on. It wasn't instant messaging where you were just talking to one person back and forth like we're used to now.
Mm-hmm.
You had 20, 30 people in one chat room listening, trying to figure out, trying to talk to certain people, asking them questions. Are you highway proportionate? What do you look like? Where are you from? You were asking lots of people different questions all at the same time, but you could see everybody's questions and answers.
Sure.
And in doing so, that made, in my opinion, that helped him make himself, quote-unquote, popular. It got his word out there to quite a few people. He used that to his advantage probably to try and locate a 5100. And in doing, while we were on commercial break, I went back and found the website that I'd learned about that 5100. It was actually made in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't hit the market until 1978, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But 75 is when they started working on it. So your theory with the 1983 could very well be the case. I think he was probably, you know, just because we found, or he was speaking those messages back in 2000, 2001, telling us that stuff, that he was part of a recon team coming back to get the 5100. Well, if that's the case, then this probably wasn't the only timeline that he's visited. He's probably been back and forth through quite a few of them. And if he was part of a military operation, I don't see why they would just send one team back for one thing. They would probably have a couple of different, or maybe if even if it was one team and John Titter was part of that team or the leader of that team, they would probably have a few different missions, a few different things that they would want to go back and change or get a hold of or try to re-affect for later in time.
How did he describe his world of 2036? Was it the utopia that a lot of people think the future will be?
It depends on your definition of utopia. His statement was that basically, his first statement overall was that the government was a whole lot more for the people and by the people, as opposed to special interest groups, large corporations, paying people once they got in office to pass laws that they needed passed or overlook things that needed to be overlooked, such as environmental issues.
Did he say how it came about that the government was converted?
His story was that there was a small civil war that went on in the United States, and it was over some government wrongdoings. The people had just finally been fed up enough with the government and the system and the way it was that it had finally gotten full of so many corrupt people that there was almost a coup. He said that the times back then were a lot more family-oriented, and in my mind, I would think back to the era of the 40s and 50s, where it took a village to raise a child, and everybody in that little town that you lived in, you all knew each other, you all looked after each other. It wasn't so metropolis city everywhere. the personal spirituality was a lot more accepted other than religions, and religions being large groups of controlling types of people that don't have to pay taxes, that can say whatever they want and convince large groups of people to do whatever they wanted them to do. And if you look at most religions, they pretty much boil down to the same thing. It's good versus evil. Every religion has a god or a supreme being that they look up to, and that supreme being tells you to do good and to avoid doing evil or stop other people from doing evil.
And that is the difference between ethics and morality.
Exactly.
Morality means, the word morals comes from the word for death and the word for law. So it's the death law. And it means that if I violate the commands of this supreme deity, whoever it is, whatever religion we're talking about, then I have, after my death, I have an accounting day where I've got to own up to what's happened, and then I'm possibly and probably going to be punished. It's the death law. Whereas ethics, so it doesn't get into I've got to answer for this. It gets into I'm affecting other people.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Religion, all religions, deal with issues of morality. Deal with them differently, but they deal with issues of morality.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of the problems, as I see it, around the world, because what is moral in one religious code may be considered really immoral in another.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we've got gods in conflict.
Exactly.
So Titer, or Titter said that religion was less influential or more?
Religion was less influential, that it was more of a personal spirituality. Everybody, I don't want to say they came together and got under one religion, but it was the whole judgment of religions. If you, like, I'm just going to throw this out here, for example, just because this is what I've seen in my personal life, that you could go to one denomination of a Christian church, and they will speak profusely about other denominations of that same religion, whether it's Baptist, Catholic, First Methodist, Presbyterian. For some reason, there seems to be a team embodiment. If you're on our team, this is what you believe, and this is what you have to believe. And if you believe, don't believe this, then that means you're a Baptist and you're going to go to hell.
Listen to this. It's not just those denominations. Within those denominations, there are subsects.
Exactly.
For instance, here in the United States, you've got, I think I'm right about this, three different bodies of Lutherans. You've got over 300 different sects of Baptists.
Yep.
And so, you know, a lot of times it's not the Lutherans talking about the Baptists, it's the Lutherans talking about those other Lutherans that are not real Lutherans. And the same thing with the Baptists, you got the same thing with the Methodists, where, you know, they're feeding on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
And he said that that's pretty much done away with in 2036.
Yeah, that's, I think what he was getting at was that it's kind of become more of a personal deal, a relationship with God and the Spirit. More of the personal basis of not being in a group, because I know plenty of people that are guilty of being in the religion because they want to be part of that group. Their friends go to that church, so they want to go and spend their Wednesdays and sing and hee-haw and have fun, and it's not really so much about them and them becoming better people and them producing better society. It's them being able to hang around and hang out with friends, discuss what's going on and what they believe, and give each other a personal affirmation of you're such a good person because you're coming to church. That's something you have to know in your heart. That's something you have to know that you're doing right. You're doing what's ethically correct, what's morally correct.
Okay, so what's happened as far as Titter's concerned, as far as his information, what's happened is there has been a, in the United States at least, a Tea Party. And the old paradigm of self-serving pompous politicians has been overthrown and has been replaced. It sounds like he's saying the same sort of thing has happened inside the hallowed halls of religion.
Yep. And, of course, all of this would be coming after the nuclear war that he had predicted and said that had happened, and that kind of, that was the primary decentralization of everybody, that if you look at the map, Iran, North Korea, and the United States are all kind of on a triangular axis around the equator. So if Iran's shipping bombs to North Korea and us, and we're all trading off nuclear bombs, that's going to wipe out quite a large percentage of the population around the Earth. Most of the people on Earth are centralized around the equatorial line. We're mostly in the middle of the Earth, so to speak.
The tiny tyrant is going to have to get a bigger rubber band if he plans on shooting any missiles over to America.
Yeah, and what I've been reading, they've already been testing things. A lot of the threats that they've been making towards the United States have been, or not just the United States, but the UN in general, was you better not block any ships that are coming in to bring us supplies, because they've been buying missiles from other people. They need to get the transporter basically to take that nuclear weapon to the United States. But again, we didn't think in 2000 that they would be capable of nuclear weapons, and they are. So I don't think we could say they'll never get the rocket that could carry it this far.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we will continue our conversation with Scott Norwood. We're talking about John Titter and time travel. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Scott Norwood, and we're talking about John Titter and time travel. Now, a couple of quick questions, Scott. Have you given any thought to this? John said that he comes from 2036, right?
Uh-huh.
That is well past 2012. Now, yeah. A lot of people have been saying that 2012 is it. That's the end. I have seen documentaries where they're talking about the Mayan calendar and Mayan prophecies. I've seen documentaries talking about Hopi Indian prophecies, Inca prophecies, Sumerian statements, all of that. And I have also seen a number of very apocalyptic in nature documentaries from a Judeo-Christian point of view, and some of them from a specifically Christian point of view. There's a lot of this stuff out there, and a lot of them are keyed in on 2012 as that, you know, they're saying that's probably when it's all going to come to an end. What did Titer say, or Titter, what did he say about 2012? Anything at all?
He wouldn't give a date on when this nuclear war that he said was going to happen. There's a lot of things he would, and I sort of respect Titter for that, in that he wouldn't come out and say, oh, the Raiders are going to win the Super Bowl in 2024. He wasn't giving any information like that. And he was trying not to give dates on certain things, but in reading and trying to read in between the lines, I think maybe that was when he was talking about this great nuclear war was going to happen, which would coincide with a lot of the predictions and what there was going to be a great destruction in the world, even revelations in the Bible that was going to be fire and brimstone, because that's what nuclear war would bring. And according to Titter, that to give you a revelation of how many people were going to die from this war, that every one person that survived would have to bury nine other people. That's a large amount, a great percentage of people that would end up dying because of this war.
So only 10% would survive.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody that's out there saying these sort of things, and of course he was on the internet saying these things, I think he did some radio interviews too, didn't he?
Did he?
I think so. Either he or a spokesperson had some radio interviews. But
surprise me.
Anyway, anyone that's out there spreading this kind of information would certainly cause the eyebrows in Washington to be raised. Were they interested in Mr. Titter?
Yes, and we have proof of that.
All right, tell us about it.
If you go to, you can go to any of, we have a few websites for this particular film, timetravel0.com. That one is specifically geared towards the film. You can watch a few trailers on there, and we actually show in the trailers when the agents had come by to speak with Chris McCarthy, asking her questions about Titter to find out what she knew. There was a point in time where they took some of her footage tapes and held them for a while to try and I don't know if it was to try and figure out what she had learned, if they were trying to catch themselves up, or if we had found out, or Chris had found out information that they didn't know yet. But, if you look at all sorts of, quote-unquote, paranormal activity, Area 51, there's government, and most people believe that there's government in there hindering the information, trying to find the information out for themselves. Just trying to get in the way and hide the information, because, again, if anybody could figure out how to time travel, most people would use it to benefit themselves. They would probably try and go back and invest in Microsoft when shares were pennies on the dollar, open their own McDonald's, place bets on sporting events, different things like that, so they could be financially profitable. I never really saw much in John Titor's postings and in the conversations that he had that he was trying to get anything from anybody other than a better world in the future. And that's where my respect would have lied with him, even if it was just some scientist who was pulling a hoax on people saying this and that. Okay, well, that's the case, but he was still putting a good message out there. If he was a person from the future that was posting all this information, then he was doing it for the right reasons, in my opinion.
Did you ever meet anyone who met Titor?
I've had quite a few people send me emails saying that they believe they did meet him. Most people who are into the John Titor story know of the lady named, we'll say, you just use her first name. Her name was Pam. Pam had gotten in touch with me, and I talked with her through emails and even over the phone once or twice. Some of the information she gave me was right along the lines of what we were just talking about. She saw things around her neighborhood that could have been government vans. Surveillance, she said her phone for quite a few weeks was clicking abnormally, as opposed to people who have their phone lines tapped would probably say. Other people said that they had actually chatted with him, that they had talked with him, and then somebody showed up at their doorstep in person, knocked on the door, left a note or something. They didn't actually speak to him, but they had an idea that it was him because of some of the things he had said online. So much information going through my head right now because of all the different emails we've been getting over the past year and a half of us trying to finish up this documentary and get the post-production done on it so that we can actually get it out there and get it released. Information that's blown my mind away that I've had to ask twice about. Pictures that I've been sent, just all kinds of stuff that I just think is extremely weird. If this guy really wasn't true, if he really wasn't going on, why do all these people have this information? Why do they have these pictures? Why do they have little bits of information that link one prediction to another or one statement to another that Titor had made, whether it was regarding CERN or the Oak Ridge Laboratories? It's infinite. I'm sure I'll after the interview with you, I'll probably get, you know, another 50, 60 emails of people saying, you know, hey, yeah, I talked to him. This happened, you know, strange stories. Lots of people wanting to have their information put into this documentary. A few people wanting their information and their names to be left out of the documentary due to possible government inquiry and the jobs that they currently hold. If they were known to be saying certain things, they could have possibly lost their job or be in jeopardy of doing such. Mm-hmm. So it's an odd circle. There's lots of stickiness and loopholes.
Why did you decide to do this documentary?
This was basically Chris McCarthy's doing, so to speak. She had heard about him, went online and found out some information about him, and had really come to a point in her life that she was convinced about what he was talking about the world. We need to basically look in the mirror and start changing ourselves so that we can change the world. And she wanted to know the truth about it. She wanted to find out if he was real, if this was really going on. And if it was, then could we prove this? And could we possibly change the world with this information? Would people actually take a grip on their lives and say, hey, if we don't do this, then this is going to happen, nuclear war, civil war, whatever the case may be. So it's kind of an overall ethics and morality of being a filmmaker that I would want this message to get out, whether we would actually take us to a nuclear war or not. We still need to be a people that is racially accepted, religiously acceptable. Take those people in and accept them for what their differences are. That's what makes the world go round. That's what makes us such a great world. Other people think about things and believe in things that we wouldn't have been taught as a child. And if you think about it, children, they're not really racist. Children, black children, white children, Asian children, they'll all play together on the swings and have slides and have fun. you don't really get into that racially biased partisan until they're taught by somebody that you shouldn't like black people because of this reason, or you shouldn't like white people because of this reason. So once we can take a look in the mirror, stop teaching our children that, stop teaching each other that, or allow
them. Oh, yeah, we're in a heap of mess if we don't stop teaching that. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. I am not really sure what happened with that automated commercial break. It did weird things, video and audio. Anyway, we are back. And my guest this evening is Scott Norwood. Scott, I've got another question or two to ask, and then we're going to open up the telephone lines. When is this documentary coming out? When are we going to be able to see it?
It'll be released in about 2 weeks. We don't have an exact date yet because of the companies that are going to be manufacturing them. You will be able to purchase them on two particular websites. One is IndieFlix.com. That's spelled IndieFlix.com and CreateSpace.com. Once they have the discs mastered, it will be eventually available on Netflix and Blockbuster and a few other websites as well. So you can check that out. You can also go to fasttrackproductions.biz. That is constantly being updated. As soon as we have an exact release date, you'll be able to know that. You can also visit the time travel page on MySpace, which is myspace.com/timetravel0. As well as the Fast Track Productions MySpace page, which is myspace.com/fasttrackproductions.
Okay.
Get all the information and watch the trailers on there right now. But the release date will be in about 2 weeks.
All right. Very good. And just a reminder for all of you who are visiting my website, and if you're not, shame on you, you should. It's just got all kinds of good stuff on it. But if you're visiting my website, you can click on Scott's picture that's on my website. It's right there on the main page. You click on that picture, it will take you to fasttrackproductions.biz. It'll take you to his website. All right. What do you think, Scott? I mean, you've delved into this. You've been working on putting this documentary together. You've been exposed to a great deal of this John Titor material. Is the guy for real? From your point of view, is he a time traveler?
I believe so. I believe so. I would say just on the technological aspect of it, you know, back in 1980, you would never think that your telephone could take a picture of you and be sent across the nation to your mom, and she would be able to look at it and read a message about it. You would never have thought that was possible.
Oh, yeah, it's being done every day now.
Exactly. You do it every day, and you don't even think twice about it. So to say that as a human race, we could not figure out technologically how to do this, I think is being small-minded again. There's some, I mean, back in the days of Galileo, they thought the Earth was flat.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was the center of the universe. And when it was proposed otherwise, he was just about killed. But now we know the sun is the center of our particular universe. That we're not the only universe out in the planet. There's plenty of other universes out there that we can see.
Well, there's plenty of other galaxies we can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
All right. Let's open up the telephone line and also the flash message line. The telephone line, ladies and gentlemen, is 480-553-7232. 480-553-7232. And weird stuff is happening here, I have to tell you. Someone is helping us out this evening, Scott. Weird stuff is afoot. The video feed had no audio for the past few seconds. The audio, the radio feed did, but the video feed had no audio for the past few seconds, and now it does. So I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, to those who are giving us the helping hand, thank you very much. We appreciate your technical expertise. All right. The telephone number is, again, 480-553-7232, 480-553-7232. What do you think, folks, about time travel? Do you think it's possible? What do you think about John Titor? Many of you are familiar with the John Titor story. What do you think? Is this John Titor? Was he the real deal? If the story is correct, he's gone. He's back in 2036 or somewhere else now. But he just showed up. He said what he said on the internet, and he disappeared in 2001. Also, we have our flash message line open. For those of you who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, if you would like to participate in the discussion, we'd love to hear from you. And the way you do that, you can call the number 480-553-7232 in the United States. It will work from anywhere in the world. Or you can send, if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you can send me a flash message by going to my website. Scroll down underneath Scott's picture. You'll find a link, and that link says flash message. And you can click on that, and you can type in a flash message, and it'll begin to flash on my screen when it comes in. That's why we call it a flash message. We have one from the United Kingdom, and we have a caller on hold. So let's take the caller on hold, and then we'll take the message from the United Kingdom. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rob.
Hi, Rob.
How you doing?
Good.
And I'm calling from Oregon.
Good.
So,
are you a first-time caller?
I am a first-time caller.
Well, you know what we have to do? We have to play a little bit of applause for you there. All right.
Outstanding.
Okay, what's on your mind, Rob?
Well, as we were talking about John Titor, I've watched the story for years, ever since it first went online.
Mm-hmm.
Another friend of mine turned me on to it. And it just amazes me that the timelines that we're talking about right now are so, you know, oddly connected to what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched a lot of the debunkers talking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they try to debunk it, the debunking is debunked.
So from your point of view, John Titor is spot on? He's the real thing?
Maybe he has some insight that we don't, you know about. Maybe we're talking a Nostradamus type of individual that didn't want to have his name out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that he spoke about North Korea attacking and their missile programs, I think was extremely close.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched one video, a hoax hunter went out to debunk John, and then these other people went to find, because they found a post office box. The hoax hunter did.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed it belonged to Larry Haber's brother, I believe it was.
All right.
And so this other group went down, and they tried to find the mailbox, but the entire place didn't exist.
So then the story about the post office box was not correct.
Completely false.
Uh-huh.
And so I found that interesting.
Well, yeah, you kind of want to know why would they come up with something that would be verifiably untrue in an attempt to discredit the any story, because once it's shown that that story is untrue, the debunker story, it gives credence, in fact, to the one they were trying to debunk.
Exactly. I mean, whoever came up with this, if it is a hoax, put a lot of time and effort into it, and for no money.
Yeah, all right.
I'm curious, because if they came up with that elaborate of a story,
mm-hmm.
you know, they should be able to capitalize on it somewhere.
You would think so.
Yeah.
Okay, man, thanks for the call. I've got to move along.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, and don't wait for a long time before you call back again.
Outstanding.
All right. 480-553-7232 is the number to call. And the flash message from the United Kingdom comes from John. It says, did John Titor state anything about the alien races or the possible extraterrestrial influence in this coming war like Nostradamus did in some of his chapters? So what do you think, Scott?
That's quite an interesting question, because we had some of the same questions for him when we were chatting with him online. He pretty much refused to answer that, in that it didn't concern us to what he was trying to quote-unquote teach us. And he was fairly good about that he would stay on his topic. He would stay on what the information that we needed to know. He repeated himself, I don't know how many times, because he got asked quite a few of the same questions a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But he never answered into that. But that was something that I was curious about. It was one of my questions. If you traveled through time, then maybe you've gone to the future and aliens had landed on the United States. We did know about them, or the government finally allowed us the information that they had known all along.
Did Titor say he was human?
Yeah, I don't think he ever claimed to not be human.
But did he ever address it at all?
I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall a question like that being asked. I do know I've read some people that were trying to say that his whole name was false, like the caller had mentioned in that he used the last name Titor because it could be an acronym for time travel lore, using some of those same letters in there to create the last name Titor, and John being a John Doe type of name, a common name. But yeah, there was. I don't remember seeing anywhere where anybody asked him if he was human or not.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name is Blake, and I'm from Wisconsin.
All right, and your name is, say your name again?
Blake.
Blake. Blake, are you a first-time caller?
Actually, I am.
All right, we got to get some applause up here for you. All right, Blake, the mic is yours, man.
Hey, Scott, did anything about his age? How old is he?
John Titor?
Yeah, how old is John?
I do think I remember him mentioning that. I think he said 37 when he had come back. Well, that would have been in his time of 2036. He would have been 37. Whereas if when he came back, he would have been just about to be born.
So he's about born now, huh?
Say that again?
Then he's born or a year old? Or?
Yeah, if I was, maybe it was 47. I was thinking it was 37. But if that's the case and he was from 2036, then he would have been born in 2009. He'd be being born here shortly.
Very good. That's my question.
All right. Thanks for the call, man. Don't make it a long time before you call us again. 480-553-7232. That is the number. Worldwide, it will work. However, if you happen to be outside of the USA and you happen to be outside of Canada, you can send us a flash message. You do that by just going to my website, and scroll down, you will see a link that says flash message. Use that. It will get through to me, and I'll read it, and we'll ask Scott to comment on it. 480-553-7232. What do you think, folks? Now, you know, a lot of you are interested in the Philadelphia experiment. We've done shows in the past on that. And, in fact, I've had on this show Dr. Ron Milioni, and I've also had John Hutchinson on here, and they teamed up to reproduce the Philadelphia experiment. And some of you remember those shows we did about that. That involved some time travel. What do you think about the possibilities of time travel, and what do you think about John Titter? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Eric Donny calling from San Diego.
I remember you.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good.
I'm enjoying the show. This John Titter is new to me, and as of a few weeks ago when I heard another interview, and I just remembered, I know that you asked a few questions, and I remember a few answers, because it was so intriguing to me.
Okay.
And one I want to share is that he did say he was from Central Florida in 2036.
Mm-hmm.
He was at an Army base in Tampa. And as for his age, he became a soldier at 13 and talked about two wars, one in 2011, which was a civil war here in the United States, and then a war that broke out that was a world war in 2015, where 3 billion people died. And he became a soldier at 13, so I believe that he's more like 5
mm-hmm.
In 2009 or somewhere around there. And some of the other interviews that had taken place was by an attorney who was representing his family, because when he came in 2036, he was with his family. Family still living, and in 2036 was still living with his family. And what I was so amazed by is in his writings, he was describing the scene in the United States was that we had become community-based and that mm-hmm. we were growing our own food, that there were no mass distribution of food any longer. Nor was there yep. computerized banking. And so I think this is, I think even last year, 2 years ago, that would have been hard to really envision. But in today's environment, I think that some of us do feel we're preparing for a future that could look like that.
You know, Michelle Obama's going to be in a lot of trouble real soon.
Because of the garden?
Yes, she believes in planting gardens, and God bless her. I think we ought to plant gardens, and we ought to grow organic food. I think that's a very good idea, and Congress is opposed to you having the freedom to do that.
I totally understand, and I'm working on that. That's a big issue for me.
Yeah.
In my state, we're losing farms. Little farmers are losing farms, and I'm trying to salvage those farms. It's very important to me. I think if we're investing in anything, we need to invest in things of true value, and not for the land for the sake of the real estate, but the land for the sake of being able to grow and have some control of our own food source. So I've been buying seeds and of what seeds you can get your hands on. And I think it's wise no matter what our outcomes are, because our food is just not to get off on another topic, but we have an issue with our food today, irregardless of what the future brings.
Oh, we certainly do. We certainly do.
You're absolutely right. He did mention quite a few times about the mad cow disease and how it was going to almost revolutionize the meat market because of the fast food industry and how we're so involved in getting our food fast and the way they treat or don't treat the meat to make their money off of it as quickly as possible and as much as possible, that mad cow disease was eventually going to be a very, very common thing and was going to wipe out quite a few people because of the way that the food is prepared and overlooked as far as sick cows and other animals that we feed on. Excuse me. But yeah, it was very good points. You're up to date on your John Titor info. You're right about all the stuff that you've said.
All right, Iridani, thank you so much for the call, and don't make it a long time before you call us again. 480-553-7232, 480-553-7232. You know, when you start talking about time travel, Scott, you know, it's not just a matter of transporting yourself to another point in time. And people need to think about this. It's a matter of if you can do that, you're transporting yourself not to just another date on the calendar, but actually to a whole different world. The culture is going to be different, even if you're still in the same country. The culture is going to be different, far different. Just consider, again, the difference in our culture of 2000 and our culture in this same country. And you can do this in every country in the world. 2000, think of what it was like in your country. Now think of what it's like in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So moving yourself to another date in the calendar means that you're literally moving yourself into a different world.
Yep. One of the most interesting aspects of time travel that I had never really thought about until we'd gotten into this film, it was explained to us that if you were to jump back to from 2009 back to the year 2000, you would have to be able to calculate exactly where in space the Earth was, because the Earth rotates around the sun. 365 days takes to get it all the way around the sun, plus it's rotating itself, spinning on its axis.
Plus the sun is moving at 600,000 miles per hour.
Exactly. And there were so many calculations that you would have to pinpoint as to exactly where the Earth was, that, because you would have to move from this place in space back to that place in space that the Earth was. Using all those things put together, I was, me personally, I'm not a math major or anything of that sort, so it opened my eyes as to just how difficult that would have to be to be able to calculate where that time machine would have to send you. It would not just be a time travel, it would be a space travel. You would have to go through, and I thought it was also interesting that so many times Titor used the black hole theory and CERN in his talkings about how the time travel would be possible and how it would be made possible. It's mind-boggling.
All right. When we talk about time travel, did Titor say that he accomplished this by use of a black hole or by use of a wormhole, or did he describe how he accomplished it?
His readings claim that there was a machine that they had made that was called the C204 unit, that item could be placed in the back of a truck, in a van, and then once it was calculated, turned on, everything was a go, that everything in a certain amount of space or a bubble, similar to when you're watching the Terminator movies, when the person comes back, there's sort of a bubble around them, it burned a hole in the concrete, whatever. It was sort of similar to that theory. You know, he didn't say it burned a hole in the ground or evaporated anything that was anywhere near the bubble, but that whatever was in the circumference of this particular machine would be time travel. He posted pictures of it online. You can, if you go to the johntitor.com website, they've got quite a few pictures up there that he posted, as well as some manuals of how the machine particularly worked or what it looked like. It was very interesting. And, of course, back in 2000, digital cameras were fairly new. The pictures that he posted on were somewhat grainy, but you can still see there's quite a few components in there, and you get an idea of what you're looking at when you see the graphs and the printouts that he had posted online.
All right, we are just seconds away from a break, and when we come back from the break, we'll continue to talk about John Titor and time travel, and what do you folks think? Is it possible, and if so, is it possible that this guy, John Titor, was a reality? Was he for real? Is the story true? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Scott Norwood. We're talking about the John Titor story. we are discussing time travel and this very amazing event that happened starting in, I don't know, late 1999, early 2000, with Titor showing up in chat rooms and starting to share his story of traveling back in time from 2036. You know, maybe the technology was not advanced enough to do so at the time, but it would seem that they would be able to trace the chat where, you know, trace the computer where he was chatting from. Was there ever any attempt at that?
I do believe I remember hearing somebody saying something along those lines. They had done some research on trying to find where he had posted from what email address. And I remember, I don't remember the name of the email address, but it was something along the lines of John T. He had had some discussions and was part of a group with Art Bell, who's a paranormal.
Oh, yeah, we all know Art Bell.
We know Art Bell.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't know Art Bell?
he was part of one of their chat groups, and I think that's part of where some of his popularity and believability had come through, because Art Bell had given him a series of questions that stumped a few of his paranormal researchers and scientists and whatnot. And that kind of gave, to a lot of people, they looked at that as his authenticity, and that he could stump some of those people and answer quite a few of their questions to their satisfaction.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Jeremy, I'm actually calling from Washington.
Jeremy, are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
Well, you get some applause this evening. We're delighted that you called.
Thank you.
All right, what's on your mind, Jeremy?
Well, I'm curious about, I've done a lot of research and reading on John Titor, and actually have talked to some of the people that he talked to, and they claim that things changed around their kind of world or whatever. They said that some signs changed. One fellow mentioned that he realized one day that he was actually a school teacher, and he had all this memory of working for the government or any government agency, and no memory of being a school teacher, but that was his job. Like, everything just changed around him. Now, is there, when you worked on the film, or when you were doing the film, or when you got in contact with John Titor or whatever, did anything like that happen to you?
Actually, yeah, I got a few messages kind of along the same terms, that they felt their timeline had changed. One woman told me that she had bought herself a car about a year before talking with John Titor. It had a tape deck. It was a normal car. Then one morning she went out to the car, and the car had a CD player in it, and all of her tapes were still in there. She couldn't explain as to why, what had happened. Another person saying that...
No, wait, let me make sure I understand.
Sure.
She bought a car, and it had a tape player.
A cassette tape player, yes.
Okay. And then she goes out to the car one morning, and it's got a CD player.
Uh-huh. It was supposedly the factory that would have, if she had bought the car with the factory CD player in it, it was the common CD player that would have come in the car.
Okay.
And that her tape cassettes were still in the car from where she had, you know, a little pile of tapes that she would pop in and out differently.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was very strange. I wouldn't really have any answer to that other than if talking with John somehow changed her quote-unquote timeline, that she would have made a different decision or the car would have had something else in it, but...
Okay, I have an idea I'm going to throw out for you here in just a moment. Jeremy, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Have you experienced any sort of readjusted timeline stuff?
Not quite adjusted timeline, but I have realized that there's a lot more. You spoke about like kind of a spiritual wave or consciousness. More people are more conscious spiritually now. What like in the time that we are in?
Yeah.
And it seems like it's happened so fast and so quickly, almost like a evolutionary shift. I believe Eckhart Tolle said that it was inevitable. And I have noticed that people's views and everything are changing so rapidly compared to like over the last 100 years, in the last 10 years. Especially since this whole John Titor thing is...
I'll tell you what, within the last 2 years, things have changed dramatically.
That's true.
All right, Jeremy, thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Don't wait long and call us again. The telephone number is 480-553-7232. Or if you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can send a flash message by going to my website. Scroll down. You'll see the link. It says flash message. Are you familiar, Scott, with Ted Tweetmeyer?
Say that again.
Are you familiar with Ted Tweetmeyer?
I don't believe so.
Ted Tweetmeyer is an amazing individual. He is the person who was the project manager installing the launch controls under the launch pad down at Cape Canaveral, and he's a scientist. He's an engineer, and he has a theory and presents some evidence for it that someone has been bumping the timeline and adjusting the timeline, making things happen. He calls them time jumps in our timeline, and a pretty amazing individual. All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Very interesting show tonight. I've heard about John not a whole lot. I know a little bit about it, but I have a question to ask Scott, and then there's a comment I also want to make.
All right, go ahead.
Talk about on the ship. Kevin, you remember meeting Michael Elejan, right?
Sure.
Okay. Well, in Michael's book, he mentions that the... Lord Ashtar, the Ashtar Command, and the other higher vibration beings, because of them stepping in and helping to kind of prevent a lot of the stuff that has been written about in Revelation coming to pass, that the timeline's been changed a little bit. So I think since Scott was kind of referring to some of these other folks saying in their contacts with John that the timeline, at least for them, has changed, I think that might be possibly the overall happening, not only with John being there, but because of the higher vibration light beings that Michael channels. I think they might have something to do with the timeline. Also, the second part of my comment is that when Scott, you were mentioning about the ship that Don was traveling in. You were mentioning something about, or maybe referred to, we really don't have the technology right now to be able to try to track where his ship might have possibly come from or where it might have possibly gone, whether it's gone back to 2036 or not. Until we can come up with a way to actually not only really understand quantum physics more fully, I understand it pretty well, but also to be able to have some kind of a tracking device that can track tachyon beams, it's going to be really difficult for us to be able to know exactly whether he has gone back to 2036 in the supposed place. And
okay, well, what's your question?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, do you think that we're anywhere close to maybe coming up with that type of tracking system?
Personally, I wouldn't know if we, like Kevin said, there's quite a possibility that we've already got a time travel machine out and about somewhere, probably government owned and officiated. And if that was the case, then they would probably be the ones who would be able to track something like that. I would assume that if you're in a military unit and you were time traveling, that it would be monitored extensively so as to not let a black sheep back in the past that could make some detrimental changes in our timeline.
Or even a black sheep from the future.
Exactly. I would think it would have to be heavily regulated. I don't think you'd be able to go to a mall in 2015 and walk into a store and be able to time travel back to the Old West or travel into the future. I think it would be heavily guarded and manipulated by the powers that be.
All right, Debbie, thanks for the call. Interesting question. The telephone number is 480-553-7232, 480-553-7232, or if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you can send me a flash message. Just go to my website, click on the link that says flash message, and send your comment or question, and I'll read it on the air, provided it's pertinent to the show. Don't send me a flash message asking for my favorite recipe. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
How's it going, fellas?
Good.
Hey, I kind of picked up on the John Titor thing a few years ago and kind of looked at it, wasn't really quite sure what to make of it. You know, I didn't know my own personal beliefs really which way to go with it. But I do find it awful interesting that right now, given the time frame that he said he was from and his approximate age and stuff, is that, you know, in the past you wouldn't be able to look up or try to track down this man because technically he hadn't existed yet.
Do you want to hang on through the break?
Yeah, I'm on set, Kevin.
Yeah, okay, hang on through the break. I'll get you first up right after the break.
Alrighty.
Alright. Alright, folks, we have to step away for a couple of minutes. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on final approach. We only have a few minutes left in the show. And we're talking with Scott Norwood and Chris from Grand Rapids. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
All right. Sorry we had to cut you off. The mic is yours.
No problem. I'll get to the quicker. It just seems really cool that now if this guy's existence in our timeline, according to him, places him, you know, at a fairly young age right now existing, there's like the beginnings of a paper trail of this guy, where before, technically, he hadn't existed on our time frame yet, so there wouldn't have been anything around there for him. It might seem that as we get closer to the time frame that he was speaking of, we're actually might maybe catch up with him. You know what I mean? And that whole cycle of things there.
What about that, Scott? Has there been any attempt to locate a John Titor currently living as a little boy somewhere here in the United States?
The messages I've gotten have been along the lines of his family was based in Florida. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. His family was based in Florida. He was actually based in Florida, I believe, when he came back from his time travel, just like the previous caller had said, that according to Larry Haver, the Titor family attorney, they had moved somewhere in the Midwest. I want to say Omaha, Nebraska. I could be wrong on that, but that they had basically moved into that area because there was less nuclear radiation and bombs hitting the Midwest as opposed to our coastal cities and our Midwestern cities such as Dallas and Chicago.
And probably Phoenix.
Yeah. But yeah, that's for the people that have tried to track him down. According to what I've heard Larry Haber say, that they're in the Midwest right now, that they're not talking to people because of their direct connection with John Titor, being that they're relatives of his. But they've taken heed on his warning when he came back and visited them.
So has the attorney had any contact with John Titor?
I wouldn't be able to say yes or no on that. I've only spoken with the attorney on one occasion, and that was during another interview. But I would imagine if he is the family attorney that he would probably be in contact with the young Titor that has just recently come to life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure whether he had contact with John Titor when he came back from the future. But that's pretty much all the information I had on that.
All right, now we've only got a few minutes left here. I want to explore this concept with you. Assuming that Titor is the real deal, then you have no doubt form some conclusions about what you need to do to survive what he says is coming. Has it spurred you to make any changes in maybe where you plan to be living, what you plan to be doing? Has it caused any changes for you?
I haven't really considered put into the thought of moving somewhere else, but it has. I mean, and the things that he said and the information that he brought has kind of promoted me into making this documentary. And in turn, where he has said, "Look at the person in the mirror, change yourself, therefore you can help change the world." I've done just that. I've been trying to live a morally, ethically conscious life. Doing what's right unto myself and others, so that hopefully I might rub off on them and they would become doing the same way. Mm-hmm. The messages that this documentary has in it follows pretty much most of what we've been saying in this talk show, in that the racism, the religious persecution, the faulty government, the greedy corporations, all those things combine contribute into this great war. It also combines into the health of our earth and being quote-unquote green. So I guess my answer to that and what changes have I made in myself, yes, I've made those changes in myself, and I've also made this film so that other people might watch it, hopefully be changed by it and have their outlook changed and possibly start changing themselves and therefore being able to change the world. And the only comparison I can use to that is Al Gore's documentary. And when I watched it personally, I was shocked by just the environmental things that we've changed as a human race, and our factories and industries and our waste and our constant use of the earth and what it's done to it, and eventually what will become of the earth if we don't change those things. So in making this film, yes, I'm hoping to open other people's eyes and help them change their ways instead of becoming a people who care more about the rims on their car and what flat panel TV or what size their TV is, start thinking about the president who possibly who started a war under against UN sanctions. Start changing things above and beyond ourselves as well as ourselves. So if we start changing ourselves, then ultimately we'll change things beyond our reach.
Well, it is a self-evident fact that absolutely the only thing any of us actually controls is us. I myself control me. I have no real actual control over anything else on this planet. I only have control of me.
Exactly.
And, you know, so it really has to be, you know, an individual kind of thing where people say, you know, maybe there's something to this, and even if there's not, we'd be better off if I changed. You know, and it's really a one, it's an individual thing, one person at a time.
Exactly.
But, you know, I can't help but think about, and I don't want this to trivialize anything we're talking about, but I can't help but think about, you're talking about Titter saying, you know, you've got to look at the guy in the mirror. And I can't help but think about, that was one of the biggest hits for Michael Jackson. And I wonder,
absolutely.
Because, you know, people talk about how weird he was, and he certainly... he was different.
Different from most of the people you see.
He was different. But I wonder if this kind of information was a factor in his life. I wonder if he was into this sort of information. You know, Elvis Presley was. Elvis Presley was really into mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And he was into searching out things that were paranormal and mystic. And that's something a lot of people don't know, but he was. He read thousands of books about that sort of stuff. So I wonder, you know, if maybe that played a role in the song.
Could very well have.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Where do you go from here? We've got about 30 seconds left here. So where do you go from here? What's next up for you?
Well, I'm really just concentrated on getting this film out to the public. If they want to see a trailer, again, they can go to the MySpace page at MySpace/FastTrackProductions. They can go to the Time Travel MySpace at Time Travel Zero. They can go to my website at FastTrackProductions.biz, or they can go to the TimeTravelZero.com page.
All right, and one more real quick question. You talked about materials being confiscated from Chris. Were those materials ever returned to her?
Yes, that is the footage that you'll be seeing in this documentary. You'll actually get to see agents come in and asking her questions. She did a whole. She knew that the agents were coming up. Her door person had called, so she hid the camera in the corner. Just in case something had happened, they took tapes at that point in time. There was another interview that she did towards the end of the film where you can hear the sirens coming in.
I wish we had more time. We don't. We're out of time. Scott, just stay on the phone with me for a moment, and I want to talk with you for a moment after the show. All right, there you have it, folks. Scott Norwood and the John Titter story. Wow. What if it's true? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.